Welcome, everyone, to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Release 2.0.
Jim 2.0. That's another sitcom coming Friday nights on ABC. Where...
What, Jim 2.0?
Yeah. Yes.
Friday nights are an awful time period, so probably like Tuesday or Wednesday would be better.
Well, hopefully the worst Fox... night to have TV. But Fox is going to play all my episodes out of order, so I'll get canceled. But at least you get 14 good shows out of me.
Oh.
Yes. Friday nights are an awful time period, so probably like Tuesday or Wednesday.
The well, worst hopefully Fox.
Why am I hearing? What is all that?
Order, so I'll get canceled.
Oh,
but at least
you
get 14 good shows
out of me. Yes. What the hell is happening?
He's watching the stream and it's not muted. Hey Chris, mute that thing.
Chris, you gotta mute the stream.
Oh shit. Oh, I didn't even realize it was. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. It's we're still this live thing that we're doing.
Doing it live.
It's still pretty. It's still kind of new, so we're still ironing out the kinks.
We'll
start over.
No,
I'm not
gonna start. That was
awesome. That was hilarious. We're not starting over. No, why?
We're doing it live.
That was funny. Yeah, we're doing it live, man. We're keeping it real. So joining us this week, folks, is Chris Stockman. Oh God, I forgot your
the
title. I was laughing so hard. Studio director of Bit Planet Games, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's good enough.
Grand poobah of space.
Right.
No, but I just try. I try to keep it the dream alive.
Now, we're here tonight to talk about a game called Exodus of Soul. But you guys might remember it from a game that came out about a little over 2 years ago called Soul Exodus.
Welcome to the Game Junkie Space Podcast, where we mix up the words and everything's new.
Now.
No.
So yeah, this is basically – now, I don't want to – how would you describe Exodus of Soul compared to Soul Exodus? Like a reimagining, a retell? How would you describe it, Chris?
Well, I think there are – they do share many parts. I mean, they it's kind of roughly the same story. It's some of the same dialogue, some of the same types of missions, but there's a lot more of it. It's a much bigger experience. There's much more game mechanics to the game. It's not just... point and shoot. There's a lot more sort of verbs to the game itself, and we've really tried to. There's more ships to pilot. There's a lot of different aspects of the game that we're adding to it. The basic story is the same, so that's why we didn't want to call it Soul Exodus Remix or anything like that, because it's not really. It's not really that. It's actually a lot more than that. But we didn't want to call it something completely new, because it is still a game set in our system, and it still tells the story of humanity's exodus from Sol. So we figured let's put Exodus in front. We think the name sounds cooler, and it still conveys what it is. And we're not trying to pull the wool over people's eyes and saying this is a completely different game. It is still very similar to the original, but it's just there's a lot more of it.
So if I bought the first one, do I get any kind of discount on the second one?
Yes, you will. I don't know yet because I haven't worked out the deal with Valve. But there is precedent, right, with the Strike Suit Zero game. So I'm confident that something will be worked out. But yes. Our intention is that you'll get it at a very deep discounted price.
Oh yeah, because they just did their the director's cut.
Yeah, and they offer people that own the game to purchase it for $3, which is pretty good deal. So
that was pretty nice. I mean,
the opposite of you is though that their remix version has kind of jacked up graphics. They fixed some gameplay stuff that I didn't dig, but their graphics got like weird. I guess that's like what happens when you take your textures and run it through a PlayStation 4 and then JPEG compress them and then bring them back to a PC or something.
I don't know what they did. I mean, we didn't do that, right? We're really going above and beyond with sort of the visual quality, at least for our environments. Our ships haven't really received a makeover because that would require a tremendous amount of time and a lot more, you know, bandwidth than what we have. But our environments have all been given a complete makeover.
And well, I noticed you've got like much better effects on the ship stuff and the weapons, though. It seems like the engines have like a heat shimmer that comes out of them that I didn't see in the first game and stuff like that, though.
It was actually there, but probably not very noticeable.
Yeah, the gun definitely feels a bit meatier in this new version too.
Yeah, like the raw mechanics of the game have been, you know, completely overhauled. The physics system, even the ship energy management now. We sort of, it's not like X-Wing where you can adjust how much a certain system regenerate, but you can transfer energy from one system to another, and then you can repair in mid-flight. So before in the old game, to repair, you had to fly back into your capital ship. Now you completely repair in flight, so it adds a lot more tension to the game. It doesn't force you to go all the way back to your capital ship. So,
yeah, because I'm using a gamepad. I didn't have a gamepad when the first game came out. So I'm giving this a shot with the gamepad. And, yeah, if you hit the gamepad left, you transfer energy to your afterburner. If you hit it right, you transfer energy to your gun. But if you hit it down, you take energy from both of those things to repair your ship, which allows you more flexibility.
Which allows you to not die. So.
Well, yes, that's what I meant by flexibility.
So the thing is that you can still go back into your capital ship, but it's not to repair; it's to replenish your missile count.
Right.
So.
Yeah, which I noticed in the build that we've got, you gave us like 250 missiles, so that's not a problem.
So. Yeah, that was an unfortunate bug, but yeah.
Oh, and they don't go down either. They don't. They just.
Well, you know, the funny thing is actually. Actually, you have over 2,000 missiles. They do go down. It's just that we don't ever support that many, and it was just a code bug that we ironed out.
Yeah. Now I want to watch Brian try to shoot this guy, right? Because I ended up having to turn my joystick sensitivity way down. Like I sent you an email about that. Because just trying to keep the crosshair on that little yellow circle, because that's where you hit him at, right? The lead indicator never really gets really far out in front of his ship. And I guess that's just due to the closeness of the range at which you're shooting things. But in order to keep that on their ship whenever they maneuver quite suddenly, you know, so it's kind of a fight to keep that on there. Mm-hmm. Not a bad thing, but it's not a like a Top Gun, you know, take your time lining him up and then squeeze the trigger. It's kind of more like hose and you know, it's like a spray and pray. around the guy, but I mean that works. So I read a thing Rock Paper Shotgun said about Mike Tipul's game, and I think it applies here too, is that it's not the feel of like flying a complex starfighter around with a bunch of systems and that. It's kind of like you're piloting a gun with a chair on it.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
That's totally fine.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate assessment. I mean, we're not trying to be super realistic, but, you know, one thing, Brian, I don't know, you know, I'm curious your take on the sort of the ship physics that we put in, because, I mean, the original game, you know, you turned on a dime, and there was no feeling of momentum, there was no feeling of heaviness to your ship, and now it's like...
Oh, there definitely is now, yeah, like, it takes a second to really turn, like... because you know your ship's it's like it feels like your ship skids a tiny bit before it starts turning because there's some heft to it.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't afterburn straight at a ship and be shooting turrets and then do a 180 and not slam into the side of it. So
yeah, you will slam into the side. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. I like that a little bit because you got to think about where the frack you're going.
So oh, we have a lot. I have a question. Whenever you are flying, say with afterburners on, and you fire a missile, does the missile keep the momentum of that velocity of the ship whenever you release it? Because I noticed in the old game, I was playing the demo right before we went on the air. In the older game, I could launch a missile and then hit the afterburners and actually like run into my own missile. You know, I'd chase it
down.
Yeah,
you shouldn't be able to do that now. Yeah. Yeah, you shouldn't be able to do that. We increased the speed of the missile significantly, so you shouldn't be able to just run into your missile. And if you do, it'll be fixed. I'm pretty sure you can't, but if you can, that will be fixed.
Right.
One thing, you know, we've done is you'll notice that we actually have – like what you're playing is basically the first four prologue missions. It's not – I wouldn't even call them the first four like real missions. They're
right.
The training missions and then there's a few more missions that sort of help get you acclimated to combat.
Yeah.
And if you remember in the old game, Brian, because I know you played it, had one prologue mission and that was it. And it – so one thing I sort of wanted to point out was that our missions are a lot more – I guess that you can consider them as maybe a little shorter, but there's a lot more of them. And you get to go into the same environment multiple times but actually do different things within the environment.
Oh, that's cool.
It really sort of – you know, because in the old game and you're going to see there's some bugs there, but – okay, one thing, and it's interesting that the point lights aren't actually working on your – what video card are you running? Because your guns should be a lot more meatier than at least the effects. See how there's no, like, glows on them and all that? Are you on an ATM card?
No, I'm on a G4 770.
Okay.
It's windowed, though. Does that have any – does that mean anything?
No, it's just odd seeing your bullets – look so puny. They should have a lot more. They should have glows on them.
Yeah, they got like a post-process glow that's on them.
Well, hang on. Let me restart.
Just hit escape, go into your video settings. I think you can edit it right in the game.
Well, yeah but right. I want to. It might frack with the stream.
No, not if you hit escape and you're not leaving the game. You're just editing the video setting.
All right, let me put it up to my usual resolution. Where are you, buddy? There you are. Oh, texture Oh, everything's all the way down. Texture details all the way down.
That's why.
Oh, okay.
That's why.
Yeah, here on Space Game Junkie, we like to show games at their worst. And
I didn't even play with that. Okay. Apply.
It might have been something that's in the. I don't know. Yeah, this is just a. Like I said, it's a demo.
Oh, I want full screen. What are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, now when you get this all turned up, it's going to melt your face.
There we go. Okay. All right, now it's full screen. Now, does that look better? Oh, it does to me a little bit.
Yeah, shoot your guns. You'll know immediately.
They look a little glowy.
That's actually the Bling Cannon 2000.
There you go. Much better.
Destroy them with bling.
Oh, everything looks better. Man, I'm sorry, folks. I had everything turned all the way down and didn't even know it.
That's the difference between the old game and the new game. We've shown you
professionals,
right here.
Professionals here at Space Game Junkie.
So just to point out, that little triangle thing is totally a bug. What I'll probably do is send to you an updated scripts file later tonight so that it fixes some of the issues that you're seeing. But one thing I want to point out, Brian, and this was actually directly caused directly because of your feedback from your original review. One of the things you pointed out was that you were getting frustrated at, I think, a later mission. You couldn't actually target the ship's subsystems. You couldn't target turrets.
Yeah.
One of the objectives was actually they told you to kill turrets, and you couldn't target them, so you were like, you were a little bit frustrated. And
oh,
so
that's right. I forgot about
so
that.
One of the things that I made sure that we do was add ability to target turrets. And I think we found a pretty ingenious way of doing it. You just get close enough to the ship itself, and then the little targeting triangles will appear, and you can target them using your primary target button, right? Or you can actually cycle to them as well if you get within range.
Oh,
so,
that's how that works.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, the ships definitely look a little sweeter this time around. But then again, I am playing on a much bigger monitor than I was the last time.
Okay. Yeah, the lighting is, you know, I think part of it is the lighting, right? Like, because of the environment changes and because of all the stuff we've done with the environments, it actually helps improve the look of the ships themselves. And that's really due to lighting. Lighting plays. And I don't know if you've also noticed, but we've completely redone the sound. So, like, all of the music is all new.
Oh, is it?
The sound effects are new. It's just – I mean, I'm just telling you, it's just a better game. And I really kind of want to talk to you guys about how this all came to be, because I think it's a really interesting story.
I was definitely going to ask about how this came to be because, yeah, it's like – oh, wait. Am I docking with the Atlas?
No.
Oh.
Okay. You can fly into the ships. Which is pretty cool.
Sorry, whoever ship you are. They're probably like, what the hell is this guy doing? Wrong ship, idiot. Okay, where the hell is the thing?
So you're playing with a gamepad?
Yeah.
You'll notice that we actually did manual, or we did analog thrusters now.
Oh.
So in the old game, all it was that it was on the D-pad, and you could just, like, basically toggle thrusters to incremented up by like 15% or something. But now we actually have full analog thruster capability.
So is that on the right stick?
Yes. Yeah.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah, it's like a little throttle. I like that. I like that a lot. I wasn't sure if that was in the old game or not. But
that'll be nice for lining up turret shots. Because that way you're not having to turn the whole ship.
Totally.
You can just kind of nudge it a little.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I did want to ask about that, because when the game came out in 2012, I played it. I liked it. But it was supposed to be like part of a trilogy, and we were supposed to have two more parts to it.
Yeah.
And weren't sure what happened after that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, just to be honest, the game came out. I think it had problems. I don't think it was the greatest game in the world. I think we were, just to be honest, I think a part of it was we were kind of ahead of our time. If you recall, this was in January 2012. Star Citizen wasn't even announced yet. There was no, you know, space games weren't like the in thing to be in like they seem to be now, where you're seeing a lot of people release space games.
Which is great.
Fantastic. It's great. But I think in some respects, we were a little bit ahead of our time. And I do think the game had problems, and I think some of the early criticisms were pretty harsh, and I think it sort of set the tone for the reviews. I mean, I'm not the reviews, the sales, and we did a bunch of patches, if you recall.
Yeah,
and the game dramatically improved, but the damage was done. You know, first impressions and all, you know, sales just weren't brisk enough. And so the company shut down. Seamless shut down. And we all were kind of left to our own sort of devices. We all moved on. Everybody pretty much moved on. And fast forward 2 years later, and I brought the band back together again. So,
well, that's pretty awesome.
I reacquired the IP, and I got everybody to work, got everybody back together, and, you know, this is sort of the fruits of our labor for the last, I guess, since like February. And I actually got a private investor to help us fund the game. So,
oh, nice.
It all sort of worked out. It's all working out. You know, we're talking with Sony to see about doing maybe a Vita
Oh God, I would kill for that. Seriously, I would kill for that.
And the thought is not to do basically a port, but to actually do a side story that fits with the Vita play style and the mobile play style, the handheld play style, and actually ties into the story. So, stay tuned. I think we have it running on PS4, and I think Sony, we're going to send it off to Sony this week, and that will determine whether or not they go forward with it. So I'm optimistic, though. I'm pretty excited.
That's great. I mean, this feels pretty decent on a gamepad, so I could totally see me playing this on a Vita. Totally.
So I have a question about whenever you guys shut the old company down, and then you said you reacquired the IP. So what happens to an IP like that? You know, it's like you got a company, you've got one IP, I assume, and then you decide to shut it down. So does that, like in the liquidation, does that go up for bids and somebody else buys it? Or how does that go?
No, because so Seamless was actually owned by a separate company called Black Lantern Studios, and Black Lantern actually is still around. They are headquartered in Springfield, Missouri, and they kept it around. They kept the game obviously in the stores, and they kept it I guess pseudo alive, but you know. The issue is that they didn't have anybody to work on it. You know, the team was disbanded, so they couldn't really truly keep it alive or keep it updated or fix bugs or so it kind of just stagnated. And it was really my I saw the PS4 and its success, and Soul was always designed with a console in mind, always was. From the very, very beginning. And when you can say that that was a flawed strategy, but I always felt that the game best played with a controller. And we supported joysticks and all that, but I really designed it for console play. And when I saw that the PS4 was doing really well, I thought it would be a unique opportunity to finally bring it to the PS4 or bring it to a console. And that was the sort of reasoning behind it. And then as we started working on it, it just ballooned into a bigger game than what we originally intended. The whole thing is brand new. I mean, just to be honest, like a lot of the missions are going to be redone.
Because it's funny. I was remembering as I was playing this the first time a little earlier, I was like, didn't people die at this point? And wasn't it like, no, and like, this is going a little differently than I recall.
It is. Yeah. The story is similar in the sense of the grand tale of the game.
Right.
But there's a lot of differences to it. Just to kind of give you a little bit more of like, you know, for the people that are tuning in, you know, we actually have an order system in the game where you can issue orders to wingmen. It's just at this point in the story, you haven't sort of earned that yet. But you act and you get the pilot in enemy ship. And it's a very different flight model and a very different play style than your Hades. So new cockpit, new, you know, everything, all different types of missions. And so we can't wait to really share more. It's pretty exciting what we have planned for the game.
So in the last game, there were what, six missions? Larger missions? Nine, something like that?
So there were eight, if you count the prologue.
Yeah.
And now there's when all is said and done, there'll probably be like 15 or 16.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
So,
No, go ahead. No, because, last time I remember there were maybe eight missions and they were all. They were kind of on the longish side, but these feel shorter. So, folks, right now it's just Jim and I. We have temporarily lost our guest into the ether.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Wouldn't it be great if we had sponsors? Who would be our sponsor, though?
This podcast, like, brought to you by the letter N.
For never going to do this again.
And the number three.
This podcast is brought to you by the Oculus Rift. The Oculus Rift. Making sure reality is that much harder to deal with once you take it off. I don't know.
This podcast brought to you by headsets that make you vomit.
I'm a little frightened of that part.
Hello?
Oh, there you are. Yay!
Hold on one sec.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, the internet.
Chris Stockman, come on down.
Yeah. No, what's weird is that for some reason, my laptop is not connecting to your call. And I blame fucking Windows 8.1, but... But so I'm on my trusty iPhone and it works just fine. So
oh my God, you sound fine. You sound like you're on a normal phone call. That's funny.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Like that's
really weird. We've never had that happen before. That's really weird. It's a Skype thing. We were about to say let's try Mumble, but looks like we don't have to do that. So welcome back, Chris.
Thank you.
Sorry about the technical difficulties, folks.
No, I think it's on my end, but I'm sorry. I'm at a hotel right now, and what's weird is that I have internet access just fine, so I don't know why Skype was working. Like I said, I blame Windows 8.1.
Where are you? You're in a hotel. Where are you right now?
I am in my old stomping grounds of Austin, Texas.
Ooh, I love Austin.
Say hi to 6th Street for me.
I will. I'm actually downtown.
I miss 6th Street. I've only been to Austin twice, but every time I went, both times I went there, I had the fucking best time.
Yeah, I miss it. I almost became an alcoholic the last time I lived here. and so...
I can see that.
I lived downtown at the time, and I pretty much was drunk all the time. So,
because game development.
I owned. This was before the Seamless days, and I actually owned another company back then, and it was going down the crapper. And so, I became incredibly depressed. And what's the best way to cure depression? Drinking. So I took out my sorrows in vodka bottles, and boy, what a great summer that was.
I'm more of a hookers and blow kind of guy myself, but yeah, I see where you're coming from.
But they make it so easy on in that downtown area, because what was it, 6th Street you said? That's just all bars for like blocks.
The problem with 6th Street is that at my age, and I'm in my 30s, and now I'm in my late 30s. 6th Street sort of lost its luster a while ago. It's 6th Street, especially the closer you get to the freeway. I don't know. There's a period of where there's nothing but bars, but they're all college frat style bars, and that's really not my scene. I tend to go to like the Warehouse District, which is like 4th. 4th and 5th, and more sort of the chilled, less meat markets, and more of like chill places where you can have some good drinks and still hear each other talk, and it's not, you know, you're not fighting over for the same skanky bitch that everyone else fought over the last weekend. So
wow. No, I forget where I spent a lot of my time when I was there. I think it might have been 4th or 5th Street, because I went to a lot of slightly
nicer.
Am
I on air? Did people hear that? Oh, yes. I probably shouldn't have said that. Okay.
That's okay. But... That's fine. No, we're – no, that's great.
We're doing it live, folks.
Doing it live. Is that – that's from something. What is that from?
It is. It's Bill O'Reilly. Inside Edition days, and he's like being recorded. He gets his panties in a bunch. And
right.
Yeah.
I knew I heard that from somewhere. Just fucking do it live. Yeah. Oh, Papa Bear.
Right, exactly.
But we were talking about the game. And what were we, Jim, do you remember where we were in the conversation? Because I'm blanking.
Yeah, no. I know. I drone on. And I think we were just talking about, you know, how it sort of came to be and how all the crazy shit we're adding into it.
Yeah, and then I had asked you about how the IP went.
Yeah, that was the last thing.
About that. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
So what's the deal? Speaking of IPs, because last week we had the guy that is currently running the Open Free Space project, and you said that you had actually – you weren't working on Free Space, but you were like in the room with it, and then one of the guys on your team actually wasn't doing Free Space too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, he's affiliated with the company. He's a sort of a tech director. He's actually working on a different project right now. Helping out with another team, but he's affiliated with a company, and I've worked with him all through for quite a while. I mean, I worked with him on Saints Row. He was a tech director on Saints Row. I was design director. We worked pretty close together, and he originally worked on I think Free Space 1 and 2. His name is Alan Lawrence. I worked on a space game before Free Space. I guess before Free Space 2 came out. Called Tachyon, The Fringe.
Oh, God, yes. Such a
great
game.
From Nova Logic.
Such a great game, yes.
Yeah, I was a level designer on it. And that's – that. For me, my love of space games came from, like, Wing Commander 1, Wing Commander 2, and X-Wing. Those are where I cut my teeth, so to speak, in space games. X-Wing, more than anything, cemented my love for the genre. It was my first actually taste of level design because back then, you know, there wasn't any official tools or anything for the game. But someone, you know, the hackers were still were very much alive back then and BBSs. And so someone put out a text editor for X-Wing to do your own missions.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I remember that.
So my first mission, of course, the asshole that I was basically to recreate the Battle of Endor. And so I had a 4633. So I brought my system to a crawl.
A juggernaut that it was back in the day.
Yeah. Dude, I brought my system to a crawl. I put in like fucking what? Like 10 Star Destroyers and like 10 Mon Cal Cruisers and the bitmap image of Star Destroyer. I wasn't that big of an asshole and put down the actual, you know, geometry of the Star Destroyer. But I still brought my system down to a crawl trying to recreate that that Battle of Endor from Return of the Jedi. And then they did it much better, of course, way down the line in Rogue Squadron for GameCube. But that was my love of space games for that. So it sort of comes to Tachyon. It was kind of a dream to work on a space game. And when I got put on Tachyon, I became like one of the core level designers and designed over a dozen missions in the game, including the two final missions of both the Galspan and the Bora campaigns.
That reminds me, I need to finish that game. It's been a while since I've played it. I'm remembering I never finished it. Such a great game, though. Now, I'm sure everyone asks you this when you say that you worked on Tachyon. Did you get to meet Bruce Campbell?
No, I didn't participate in the VO sessions. I don't even think he walked into the offices, or he may have, and I wasn't there. I never met him, no. But I would have loved to. I mean, he's awesome. He's an awesome dude.
Oh, yeah. No.
Speaking of Tachyon, I mean, that's where I got Slide from. Like, Soul has Slide, and that was sort of my homage to Tachyon, because Tachyon has Slide in it. So
I'm doing Slide right now.
I love Slide. Slide's awesome.
Yeah,
when you get really good at it, you can really do some crazy maneuvers and do some really cool things. There's another thing that we added in also is you can quick reorient back to your original position from when you started Slide. So if you're going in one position and you start sliding.
Oh, is that what that button's for?
Yeah, you can go and quickly get back to where you were going. So,
oh yeah, I was wondering what that little a little thing was for. Okay, one more down. Woo! Okay. Oh, hey, what are you doing, buddy? Yeah, these guys are – the thing that makes these guys hard to hit, besides maybe me just sucking, is that they have a really kind of thin profile. They're very thin fighters.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a it's something that we may still want to tweak. I mean, we've already scaled up the fighters significantly from the original game. We scaled them up by almost, I guess, 100% or so. So,
wow.
But they may need to be further adjusted. You're playing with a gamepad, right?
So. I am. Last time I played with the mouse, so I might just be a little better with the mouse.
Yeah, no,
I have more experience flying with a mouse.
Is there any kind of a difficulty slider on the enemy? Because the behavior that I'm witnessing on them is they kind of fly straight for a little bit, and it gives you a chance to shoot them, and then they start maneuvering around, and then they decide, I'm going to fly straight for a couple more seconds. And that's really the only opportunity I've got to kill one, is, you know, put a couple bullets in them whenever they take a break.
Right. Right. Yeah. They're all, you know, the funny thing is they're all set to, like, the lowest difficulty set. It's not really difficulty. It's a skill level. So they're all set to the lowest skill level, but they may need to be adjusted some more, so that it's, you know, the key is that I wanted the feeling of this mission to be one of you're overwhelmed by fighters, and it's not meant to be like a I mean, you are dogfighting, but they're kind of, it's kind of really an intense scenario, and I kind of wanted you to be out of breath at the end of the mission, you know?
I can see that.
But one that you're not dying from. And if you are dying from, then it's too hard, and we need to tone down the difficulty. But I just wanted it to be more of an intense experience where you feel like you're kind of not equipped to handle it.
Yeah. Hey, Brian, can you up the volume of us? Because people in the chat are saying they can hear you fine, but they don't hear us. So you might want to bring the volume level up in open broadcast.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I didn't. It's weird because I hadn't changed anything from the last time.
Yeah, just turn your main PC volume up then.
Okay. All right, it's up. Hopefully that does it. Sorry, folks.
Any better? Hello, Internet.
Testing. Hello. Is that better?
So, okay. Anyway, we'll assume so. I was just basically like looking at the behavior on that, because whenever they do decide to maneuver around, I kind of get the feel like, well, you get a lot of experience with Star Wars. Whenever you're chasing an A-wing around in a TIE fighter, right? It's kind of that, and then it takes a break, you know, and it's like, oh, thank God I can shoot it now. But if they were as aggressive about shooting me as I am about them, and there's as many of them as there are, then I'd be snuffed in about 10 seconds, right? So, I mean, you got to find a balance in there. So,
yeah, there's definitely a balance. They are at their lowest skill level, so they don't, you know, the higher skill levels, they actually evade more often, and they actually will turn around, like, in mid-flight, do a 180 while continually going the one direction and start shooting at you. So they actually kind of do a slide maneuver in a sense, but they do just a quick 180 and they just start nailing you at the higher skill levels. No doubt we'll be tuning this stuff till we ship. I mean, it's funny because when I play it, I can get probably like almost close to 20 kills on that mission, which is, you know, but I mean, I'm super good at the game, so
I play it nonstop.
Yeah, no, it does. I know.
I'll get better once I get more use of the gamepad, I'm sure. Oh, okay, cool. Wait, are there more guys? Are there more bad guys? No, okay. Now I gotta wait for everyone to dock. Fine. I'll wait for everyone to dock.
I'm not a fan of that sequence still. Like, I'm not waiting around for people to dock is just sucks. The idea behind it is, so one thing that you're not seeing, right, or you're not hearing is all the dialogue that we gotta put in.
Right.
And there's a shit ton that's going to go in that will make it feel far more alive than what you're seeing now, which is there's almost like there's very little of the dialogue that's added. So, but the general thought behind it is like, let's hurry up and go. But you also get awarded points, and you probably are not now because I haven't added in yet, but you'll be awarded points for all of the wingmen that survive. So it sort of leads me to my next thing where what we added in is this idea of persistent ships. So your ship's health and even the attachments on the ship, so all the turrets and all that, carries over from mission to mission.
Right.
So whatever damage that these ships took will carry over into the next mission. It might be kind of broken right now, but that's general, you know, that's generally the idea. And so, which means that your wingmen also too carry over. And so I wanted to reward the player with points if all of his wingmen survive. It's just kind of a points thing that helps like with leaderboards and so forth.
You know what? I like that. I got to say, I liked having to be like, oh God, are they all going to dock? Oh God. Like one guy died. I don't know why he died, but like, oh God, are they all going to make it? I like kind of watching them flitter around waiting for them to dock.
Yeah, it kind of adds more life to it. And it kind of gives the player a bit of a breather too. Like he's done and the general idea is let's hurry up. Let's get the fuck out of here. Who knows what's going to happen. And you know, all those transports died. Well, actually, and you probably what you didn't realize is actually four got away and by the nick of their skin, so to speak, they got away. And so you're going, everybody's getting ready to dock to go chase after them. And, right. And to not really chase, but to go to them. They went off to some, you know, discreet location, and you got to go after them so that, you know, they don't bite the dust, so to speak.
Right. No, I was enjoying that. Can people hear us now, by the way? Jim?
No, he said it's still bad, but we'll have to figure it out later. Yeah.
Is it me? It's
me and you. It's both of us for whatever reason. That's
really weird because I can hear you guys just fine. Open broadcaster software apparently is registering.
It's just picking the audio stream up lower than what Skype is. So weird. Because it reads your PC volume level. So you'd actually have to bring the volume of us up in your ears for the stream to reflect it.
Well, I can do that in Skype. Hang on.
Man, it seems like I come on and there's gremlins everywhere.
Okay. All right, well, Jim, in Skype, do I slide the little blue thing to the left or the right on the speakers if I want them to be more, like, sensitive?
To the right.
To the right. Okay, it's almost all the way at the top. So hopefully that'll take care of it. I mean, even Skype can hear you guys. It's
yeah, your volume level for you guys is fine on my end too. So
sorry, folks. Don't know what's going on. You'll be able to hopefully hear this in the audio stream at the very least. But no, I mean, this is very cool because I did enjoy Soul Exodus. It had a really cool story, and I wanted to see more. And when that happened, we're like,
Yeah.
So,
well, if all goes well, you will definitely get the, this first release is not the whole thing, but it's a lot bigger chunk, and then hopefully, you know, our costs are so low, and we're doing this, for the love of the genre and the love of the game itself and the IP that, the plan definitely is to continue on. And I think Space Games now, I think even more than they were 2 years ago, are really sort of making a comeback. And I think certainly Star Citizen is helped out and Elite Dangerous and so forth. And so I all the others that have come out but one thing I will not do, and I'm adamant about this, is I will never bite off more than what our team can chew. I will never promise, over promise and under deliver. It's been a thing of, you know, it's been a pet peeve of mine. And I think and I'm not going to name names, but I think, you know, certain space games have come out and they give the genre a bad name.
You mean like just about every 4X game that's come out in the last
Years? I mean, I don't know about, I'm not a big fan of the 4X stuff. So I don't really, I don't play a lot of the 4X stuff. I'm more of the action-y space game, you know, aficionado, and I really try to play every single one that comes out.
Well, but nothing, everything can be a superstar like X Rebirth. So, I mean, you got some.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right, and that's you know, I bought it and was vastly disappointed at this, you know, the scope was great, and the visuals were great, but you couldn't run it. And it was boring. I mean, it was just flat out boring. And I know that they've done, you know, patches and so forth. And you know, I'm not going to, you know, sit here and cast stones and say that Soul Exodus was the greatest game ever. It certainly wasn't. But you only paid $10 for it originally. And we certainly, you know, and it was a smaller experience, but I felt it was something that our team was proud of. And, you know, it was, not incredibly ambitious, but for our team, for the team behind it, it actually was pretty ambitious in terms of the fact that, you know, the team had never touched Unreal before, had never worked on a game before, and here, you know, here we were tackling a genre that no one really ever touches. So, but there's other sort of more recent games that have come out that look good on paper. They've got a tremendous feature set and they proclaim that there's, you know, dozens and dozens of ships to pilot, right? And a big expansive world. And that when you play it, it sort of kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth. And look, like I said, I don't want to name names. I'm thankful that people are still making space games. I just wish they were better as a whole. And you don't have this almost self-fulfilling prophecy where people develop these big space games, they're grand in scope and they're grand in features, yet they're poor in execution. And I, you know, we will not go down that route. We don't believe in bigger is better. We believe in quality and try to make, you know, a good polished experience. And if that's, you know, means it's a smaller game, then so fucking be it, you know?
Well, no, that's totally fine. I mean, I just lost a frigate. What the hell? All kinds of shit is going down right now in the game I'm playing. All kinds of stuff is going down. But oh god,
I kind of went off on a rant there, but I believe it. I really, really believe it. I don't know.
No, that is fine, man. I mean, as fans of the genre, we got to appreciate the dedication. I mean, you've been with the genre a while. You've been in the trenches, and that's awesome. All right. So let me ask you something. I'm going to switch tack here real quick. Is there a way I could see what's attacking my target? Is there a way I can do that?
Yeah, actually, if you target your target, anything that's attacking it should be blinking. Like their targeting triangle should be blinking.
Oh, interesting. Okay, let me see.
Like, what are you looking at, or what are you looking at specifically?
I'm targeting the Atlas right now because I'm supposed to be protecting it.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to figure out which fighters. Is that a frigate? What is that thing? Oh, that's a frigate thingy. Oh, that's what's hurting it. Hang on, I'm gonna shoot that frigate. Because I have 2,000 missiles.
Yeah, you'd be able to take it out pretty easily. Yeah. Basically, so if you target a friendly ship like the Atlas, anything that's attacking it should be flashing. And if it's not, you know, the one thing actually, the one thing that I just realized is that the frigate targeting triangle may not be flashing because. The frigate is actually not attacking it. It's the attachment of the frigate is attacking it. So like the cannons are attacking it. So that's bug. So we just gotta fix it. It really should be like the frigate itself should be flashing. But like for example, any fighters that are attacking your the Atlas or friendly ships, their targeting triangles will flash. They'll flash.
Ooh, that frigate's going down. Yeah, because I got 80 million missiles. Don't mess with me. I've got so many missiles right now.
So one little secret that I would like to share with you guys about those frigates or about there's actually a couple little secrets. So one thing is we actually kind of – I really want to fix this, but the engines on the back of the frigate can be destroyed.
Oh.
And if you actually destroy the engines, they'll stop. So the frigate will actually stop, and the capital ships will respond to that as well. So they won't just ignore that. And then the other thing is that they actually, and you probably already saw this, they jump out, right, and then they jump back in.
Yeah, I did see that.
Well, any damage you cause to them will stay with them. So
good.
So like. Yeah, so when they first jump in, if you go up and you start fucking wailing on them and you destroy any turrets or whatnot or anything at all, even their damage values will stay over when they jump back in. So just a sort of, you know, a little tidbit on some of the new stuff we've added.
Nice. Yeah, slide was really nice there when I was just being able to for God's sakes. Protect it from what? There's nothing around. I'm going to dock then. I also love the wreckage, this big old wreckage that I'm flying over right now of that frigate that someone destroyed. It was the Atlas or something. The Atlas is hurt a little bit. I like that. I like that there's like little fires inside and stuff, little detail like that. Ooh, I got the elite rank. Yay me.
Oh, so you beat it. Okay, cool.
Well, I think I wouldn't have been able to had I not the overabundance of missiles to hurl at the frigates. that's all the missions. That's pretty good. I mean, that's
what we call the demo, sort of. You know, it's just a taste of what is to come. There's so much more that it's, you know, it's pretty meaty game, I think, for the obviously, for the people that bought it, we'll get it at a deeply discounted price. But the price we're shooting for is $15.
Oh, that's not bad. Even if you're just getting into it, that's not bad. I mean, you're getting a competent, well-made. Now, let me ask you something. You said earlier that the cost of this is not very high. Is that because you already have? Is that because you already have like the base game made and you're just tweaking it now?
Yeah, a lot. Well, a lot of it is that, you know, the team is distributed, so we don't have the overhead of offices and all that, you know, stuff. It's all we're all work from our homes, and we all are just super dedicated and passionate about it. So it ends up being a much sort of cheaper game to make. Not to mention that all we really are, right, is we're adding on to all of the stuff we did prior, and we're fixing all the stuff that we didn't like. And so it ends up being, you know, we're not recreating everything from scratch. Like all of our tools and, you know, all carry over. And it's all Unreal, right? So it's a pretty mature engine and tool set. So and myself, you know, I designed and scripted all of the missions in Seoul. And I'm doing that the same here. And I know the tool set so well that it just, you know, it's pretty fast.
Oh wow! So how long like have you been working with the Unreal Engine?
We started working with Unreal back in 2010. It was sort of my choosing. I really wanted to work with Unreal, and I thought a space game would fit well with the tool set. And
excuse me.
And so, yeah, we started working with it in 2010. And so we actually, you know, we know that engine very, very well now. We know it really well.
Right. And didn't they just cut their pricing? or something like that?
Well, yeah, they did it for Unreal 4, so we still use Unreal 3, and it doesn't really apply to our game per se. But I'm really good friends with the Epic guys, so they've given us a really good deal, and we're real happy with it.
Okay, so let's see. In the last one, you had 8 missions. This one, you're going to have a little more. Yeah, because I can already see like the missions I'm playing are so far different from what I remember of the original already.
Yeah, completely different.
Because like in the original, if I recall, after the first or second mission, all you had was the Atlas.
That's right.
And you would gain other ships as the story went along to help you out, but pretty much the Atlas was your baby. And now I was in just in a mission where I had, you know, 2-3 frigates and then one got destroyed. It was like, God damn it.
But see, this is the interesting thing, and this is sort of some of the breadcrumbs we're putting in. Notice, like, in the previous mission, 4 capital ships jumped out, right? And in the beginning of that mission, only 3 showed up.
That's true.
Where's the other one? Where's – you know what I'm saying? So, like – and this is where the Vita stuff comes into play. So – The general thought is the Vita will actually tell that story, and it'll also eventually be downloadable content for everything else. But it'll be kind of a standalone thing with the Vita if I have my say in any of this. Is it'll be a standalone game that tells like a lot of that story of what happened in between that time period between the end of that demo mission or the end of that mission that you just played. And the beginning of the main game. There's a 10-year time period that we're going to tell a pretty decent story behind.
Oh, that's right. I remember because in the original game, it was like you had your first mission. And
yeah.
Then like 5 years or 10 years passed and you're all grizzled and
yep.
Everything. And okay, I remember that now.
So there is still elements of that, but hopefully we're actually going to get to tell this story, and we have it all basically laid out. So, you know, and that's where I want the Vita to come into play. Like, and I keep saying that because the beauty of that is that it all takes place in sort of deep space, and it's perfectly deep space missions where you don't have a lot of, you know, space station parts and a lot of like destructible geometry and all that stuff that, you know, that lends itself well to the Vita's technology and what the Vita's capable of doing. As you've seen in a recent space game that tried to do a surface mission that has, you know, Superman 64 pea soup fog in it, right? And so...
Oh, boy. I know exactly... I don't know. I know exactly what you're talking about, and it just...
You're trying to push... you know, too much into the system. And so, I just want to say that we're not going to do that. We're trying to design a game, the Vita stuff to be, you know, suitable for that platform and suitable for everything else. Don't get me wrong, but it's going to be designed with that platform in mind. So it's going to take advantage of that platform first and foremost before it goes to everything else.
Oh, good. Cause Have you tried to program anything for the Vita? Have you done anything for the Vita?
No, we haven't. But here's the thing: Unreal supports Vita. As you know, Borderlands 2 is coming out. That is an Unreal 3 powered game, and that blows my fucking mind. And they've done a great job at bringing that experience to the handheld. And so, we already have Vita dev kits in house, and we already have access to the engine. So it literally is, you know, it's bringing our systems over to the Vita, and we're, as long as we don't have to do all of our port the whole game over, which will just won't flat out won't work. There'll be too many sacrifices, and it'll just be a subpar experience. So we're not going for that. It's just, you know. Like you'll see down the road when we start really releasing videos of all the new environments, you know, we've gone back and there's like an environment. If I like to point out, there's one environment that you went through in the original game It was the Triton environment, and you saw a bunch of like frozen destructible, or they weren't destructible. They were just frozen, sort of static pieces of capital ships. It was the mission that, yeah. So we've gone back and we've completely redid that whole environment, and we actually took all of that, completely redid all of those pieces, and turned them into destructible objects, so that you could fly around and you'll see ships collide with them. You'll see big capital ships collide with them and destroy into like a, you know, like ice particles and ice pieces, and there's tons of them around. There's tons of them around, and they're all like destructible. So, we put in this whole object system where a destructible object system where big pieces of space stations are fully destructible. So environments are not static, right? And we actually had that a little bit in the first game, but we never really took advantage of it. We never gave the player the tools or the missions and the objectives to actually take advantage of that destructible stuff. So that was an oversight on our part, and we're going back and, you know, we're saying, dude, now you get to blow shit up, right? And you get to destroy, you know, components of stuff that you know that was always there. It just was never part of the original game.
Nice. I do remember that. I remember, wasn't one of those missions you had to actually fly through a big space station?
Yes, the last mission of the game, you did. You flew through like Death Star style, kind of. Not truly trench run, but reminiscent of a trench run, and you destroyed the core of the space temple. Remember that big giant space temple that you?
Yeah, I do remember that. And then you find out that they're hiding on the moon, and you're like, "Where's the rest?" And now I'm really happy to hear that we're going to be seeing more of that. As long as it's not like Iron Sky, I'll be fine with that.
No Iron Sky,
because Iron Sky wasn't very good. At least the 20 minutes I could stomach before turning it off.
I think I only watched it for 20 minutes as well, so yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to like it because it sounded like a great premise.
Yeah, oh yeah. Nazis on the moon, that's awesome.
I know, but...
Yeah, the movie is kind of the same way, right? And I'm sort of in the bad movie business already. And if I find a movie that I just can't watch, well, there it was.
Oh,
but have you seen Star Wreck, the first thing that those guys did? That was actually kind of funny. It was Star Trek versus Babylon 5.
Oh, I heard about
it. Like
it. Yeah.
It was like a weird ass Swedish fan fiction. Yeah.
So let me ask you guys, like, what are, you know, actually, let's talk a little bit about Star Citizen. Let's actually name some names. I want to get you guys. I want to get your guys' take on the. I mean, I'm okay. Let me just preface this. I'm incredibly thankful for Chris Roberts and what he's done for the genre. For you know, he was one of the originators of space combat. Wing Commander holds a special place in my heart. Always will. But let's fast forward a little bit, and I think we can all appreciate Freelancer, right? We can all appreciate and thought, you know, great game or whatnot. But if memory serves me correctly, now correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Freelancer like promise a whole bunch of stuff and basically came out and it was pretty neutered and it didn't really like live up to the expectations that was that,
yeah,
that you know
kind of backed
people
out of
bestowed
it
upon
hard.
It.
Yeah, I mean, from what I remember, Chris Roberts left.
He did, yeah.
The company, because Microsoft just wanted such a castrated version of what he was. Because I went to a thing called GameStock in 1999. It was a Microsoft gaming con, and it was press only. It was amazing. And they showed an early version of Freelancer, and it looked incredible. These huge structures you could fly through and – massive like stations and space docks. It looked incredible. And then when we got the game, we're like, huh, that's a lot smaller than it,
What's your guys' take on the whole, I mean, it's a phenomenon, right? I mean, we're at a point now where it's like, you know, they're raising $1 million a month. And it's quite amazing. I mean, it's, you know, what they've done is genius, in my opinion. I mean, it's absolutely genius.
Yeah, but the problem is that they have potential to become the Goldman Sachs of the games industry.
Yeah, a lot of people are worried about that. There's a lot of negativity. Whoa, there! I just almost flew into an enemy frigate. There's a lot of negativity flying around because they're seeing this. They're seeing the whole campaign is hucksterism more than anything else.
Right.
And
what I'm worried about is like now they're projecting a release. Right, of the persistent universe and next year, right?
Yeah.
Like they're talking 2015. Well, dogfighting, we're in May, and dogfighting, which is a core component of the game, right? No doubt. But it's actually kind of a small part of the game if you look at the grand picture of what they're looking at doing, has yet to be released. And we're in May.
And what he showed at PAX graphically was good, but it looked like he was having a really tough time controlling his own game. And I don't know if that's because he's like standing off to the side of a screen with a 360 controller trying to like, you know, flail around in space or what, but it did not look like the level of control that I would want. So, and I think there was sort of an epic freak out by people after seeing that too. So
was there?
Yeah, there some people were just like, "Oh wow," you know. But I don't think that there's. I think that there may have been contributing factors to that, and I think that that's like some super early alpha business. And he's in front of like a few thousand people, probably standing off to the side doing it. But yeah, I don't know. I've always been very cautious about it. I'm probably $1,000 less invested in that than Brian. So
about that, yeah.
So
yeah, I have a few ships. I have a few ships.
It's very tempting to buy them, and I think it's genius what they're doing. I'm just, you know, I'm a bit skeptical, and that's part of me being the developer as well, and wearing that hat and understanding. You know, there's eight companies working on this game, right? And I don't think a lot of people know this, but there's eight companies working on it, and they're all scattered around. Different parts of the world. Canada and Austin and Santa Monica and Mexico and the UK and, you know, and they seem to be, you know, they're definitely making progress. But I just cannot see it being done next year to the point where I think people expect it to be done.
Well, that, and he's also got his brother, Eric, is the one that's actually doing Squadron 42, from what I understand. Which, I mean, they're going to provide the engine, so I guess Eric just needs to provide the scripting, which is okay. I mean, the last thing Eric worked on was it was before Freelance.
I think
Starlancer.
It's Aaron, right? I think it's Aaron Rollins. Aaron. Isn't it his name Aaron?
Yeah. Hey, Jim, you might be thinking of Eric Peterson, who worked on Conquest.
Okay, yeah. No, it's Chris Roberts' brother. Because the two of them were at Digital Anvil together, and the brother Eric, whichever. No, Eric Roberts is actually the brother of what's that actress Roberts? Julia Roberts. That's Eric Roberts, who's in terrible movies. So except for Dead or Alive,
The Expendables was not a terrible movie.
Have you ever seen Dead or Alive?
No.
Oh my God! Go rent Dead.
And don't ever see it.
Why would I? Why would I do that to myself?
Because
bouncing,
it's Dead or Alive.
Bouncing boobies. It's boobies,
dude. Boobs.
They
come
bounce.
On. They do kung fu. So anyway, yeah. Mega Shark. He was in that. So, anyways, yeah. So I guess the other Roberts, right? But he's doing the Squadron 42 thing. Well, he did. It was Starlancer, which was before Freelancer. And I honestly thought Starlancer was a better game than Freelancer. So
really?
Yeah. It just, I don't know, it was better to me. And Freelancer was a shock because that was the first space game that said, fuck it, we're doing it with the mouse. It's all mouse.
But it worked.
Yeah, right.
I know, but it like really blew people's minds. It was like, oh my God. And then the other thing that was just really weird about Freelancer to me was that it was basically Diablo in space because you're chugging health and mana potions while you're flying. And that was very shocking. So at some point that game became an action RPG. I don't know. But Star Lancer at least was more true to the Wing Commander type of thing. You know,
Star Lancer came out on the Dreamcast, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it did, didn't it? Wow, that's scary. As did like Wing Commander 4 and other things.
Oh, did Wing Commander 4 come out on Dreamcast?
No, PS1.
PS1. Yeah. Oh god. Yeah. It was 3DO. So they had like Super Wing Commander or some shit for the 3DO.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I tried playing Wing Commander 4 I bought it like for the PlayStation, you know, store, PlayStation Network and stuff.
Yeah.
Dude, doesn't support analog. It still uses, you know, it uses the D-pad.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. It supported. It was only the D-pad. I'm like, I love that. This is my favorite Wing Commander. I can't do this. I can't do this at all. But speaking of Aaron Roberts, let's not forget he did Privateer 2. So let's not say he's that great because the darkening guys. I mean, come on.
But he got walking.
I never played Privateer 2.
Oh, okay, you know what? Privateer 2 is worth playing. Well, playing. Or just watch the movie part because it's got – you can probably find it on YouTube. It's got Clive Owen and John Hurt and Chris Walken and David Warner. And it's got a great – and Jürgen Prochnow, you know, who was in the Wing Commander movie, humorously enough. It's got all this great acting in it, and the gameplay was terrible. I mean, it was so, watch the movie part on YouTube somewhere. I'm sure it exists.
I really want these guys to succeed. Like, you know, I really want them to succeed because if they don't, that's a death nail.
Well, here's the thing. It's going to be tough because there are all these expectations. And the problem with all this is because they're getting a level of access people have never gotten before.
Yeah.
It's like, it's fucking with people's expectations. It really is. And so I don't envy them. They have to skirt this line between what people want to see and what they can give them at any given time. But people are hungry for information. Like, they update their site like almost every day with stuff.
Yeah.
Which is impressive, which is an impressive enough feat on its own.
Well, it's the longest running Kickstarter in the history of anything, because the Kickstarter stop doesn't mean that the Kickstarter stopped. But at least they're doing like what we tell people, that, you know, we get a lot of developers and it's their first time fundraising on their own and stuff that come on the show. And the advice that we always give them is update at least 3 times a week. Put something on there.
Right.
You know, you have to touch your fans, not in a naughty way, but you know, often enough that they feel like you didn't just stick this up there. You know, you didn't throw it against the wall to see if it sticks. It's actually, you know, you're committed into what you're doing. They definitely have done that. I just wonder how much of that, what are they, like 45 million now or something? So
I mean, there will be that in a month or two.
Yeah, I quit counting at 40. I think. So it's basically, I wonder how much of that is actually going into the media machine versus the game development. Because there's a whole division of that is just the hype factory and trying to maintain.
I want to know their burn, to be honest with you. Like, I want to know their monthly burn rate and are they making enough money in from the Kickstarter community to cover that? My guess is no. Knowing the costs of running studios and overhead, you know, in providing insurance and all that stuff that people don't really think about. But it all adds up. And when you have, you know, essentially 8 studios, and I know they're contracting out a lot of the studios, but you essentially have, you know, I think it's like 6 to 8 studios all working on it with an average headcount of probably 20 to 30 with more, you know, Austin's got like 50 people, I think. And Santa Monica's got like 20 people. But just imagine like the average salary. And if you know, I would love to know that burn rate. And if really the million that they're bringing in a month is covering it. My guess is no. My guess is that there's other money at play here. that.
I believe they said in the beginning that the crowdfunding would be like to show investors interest.
Yeah,
and my God, have they shown interest? Now there was a monthly report a while back, maybe it was February, where they actually showed some numbers. So I'm trying to find that. Where are you, buddy? But
it's just one of those things. Like the developer in me is just, you know, it's super curious because, you know, I've run companies before, and I've been responsible for doing the math and doing the numbers, and I know, you know, how much it takes and how much it costs to run a small company. And imagine doing something where, you know, you're talking like 300 people, you know, I mean, spread out across the country. Yeah, I mean, it's just quite the endeavor.
That's how many they have. They have 103 people employed by the actual company in February, at least. And then they have 212 outsourced people.
Yeah, and once you climb that high into funding, you know, just crowdsourced funding, then you are always a sneeze away from a class action lawsuit that will eat you alive. You know, so they're going to have to be very careful.
It's going to be a very interesting next year or so. I'm real, real curious to see how they navigate those waters and how they try to, like you guys said earlier, meet fans' expectations. You know, because everybody's different, and if you start getting into territory where they release something and it's not quite up to the snuff, are people going to abandon it? Are going to be pitchforks and torches? You know, what exactly is going to happen? I'm curious. But you know, whatever Chris says though seems to be, he's God, so maybe it'll be fine.
I think if this crashes and burns, which I hope it doesn't, people will probably go to Elite Dangerous.
It looks amazing. Elite looks really good.
Elite is playable right now. You know,
it's playable right now. It's they're already in.
But you have to spend $200 to get in, right?
Yeah, that's kind of a problem. That's a thing that I'm seeing in this crowdfunding thing that also weirds me out, is where people are like, I have to have it now, so I am willing to part with $200 or $300 to get, like, and they're not the only one. Like Galactic Civilization 3, on the day it was announced, they were like, yeah, it's $100. We're gonna sell the game for probably 40, but pay $100 to get in now because you love us and you're gonna fund it or whatever. So and people jumped in on that because I guess it's the thing, the curiosity, right? And people that have
it's
got
not
enough
just
money to satisfy curiosity.
It's not just the curiosity. They want to be a part of something. They want to be part of the conversation. They want to feel like they're influencing the development of something they love.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on there. And personally, I'm kind of liking it. I'm liking that it gives developers another option to fund their dreams and their games. And it also gives us as fans a level of access, like I said earlier, that we've never had before. There's a double-edged sword with that. I mean, on one side, we get to see, you know, all this stuff go, like with like we said with Enemy Starfighter, like what we're talking about tonight. You get to see how the sausage is made. And if you love something enough to want to see how the sausage is made, you're going to love something enough to want to invest in helping make that sausage, I think. So
no, you're right.
So it's I think it's overall a good thing. It's going to backfire here and there. It already has, like some games, like what was that one? It was Cube World. Have you guys heard of this one? Where like it came out and it was great, and then like the developer got hit with denial of service attacks and basically disappeared for about 6 months.
I didn't know that, but I was wondering where that went, because I remember it came out and it was supposed to be the next great, like, Minecraft, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, it looked pretty cool, but then they just kind of disappeared. So that's what happened, huh?
Yeah, they say their site got hit with all these denial of service attacks. So you could only, like, I had to wait till about 3 o'clock in the morning to be able to log in and buy it at one point, because that was like the light time where people weren't attacking it so much, apparently. And the devs like, oh my god, we can't handle this, and they just kind of turtled for a while. They're still working on it. Like they've been starting to put out more and more updates, but I mean, there's a downside to this kind of exposure, you know. But I think it's doing more good than harm overall, especially since we love games. We want to see how they're made, so and we want to help influence that. So I get wanting to shove $100 at something like Gal Civ 3 if you love Gal Civ, you know. Like I've shoved, oh, I hope the girlfriend doesn't hear this, about $800 into Star Citizen.
Yeah.
And I've already put about $75 into Elite Dangerous, for example. And who knows how many – I don't even know how much else I put in Kickstarters. I've backed about 50 Kickstarters.
So at what point do you actually get access to Elite Dangerous at the $75 level?
Well, at the $75 level, you get it – like the $50, $75 level, you get it when it comes out. But a bunch of people are like, Brian, you need to write them and tell them who you are so they'll give you alpha access. I'm like, I'm not anybody. What are you talking about? But so I might get in the beta. I wrote them after being pushed, and I should get in the beta. So maybe a couple of months. But – like I was telling you, Jim, someone lent me their alpha access, so I got to play some of the single-player missions. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's so sweet. It's so sweet. it's impressive because, like, they're not making all the waves that the Star Citizen camp is making.
Yeah, right.
Which is kind of interesting, like, I couldn't stand their Kickstarter when it came out because it had, like, no information, no video, you know. It felt really cheap. And I was like, what are you doing? I was actually mad when that one came out. But after seeing more video of it, I think it was that Capship video that blew me away. I'm a total, like, 180 now. It took a while. But I think that if there's going to be a true success story here, it might surprise us all and be Elite Dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, it looks amazing, and I can't wait to play it. I mean, you know, one thing I will say, and what got me even more excited above all else is the incoming VR revolution. And I do think it is a VR. I think it is a revolution. I think Oculus has a real opportunity to bring space games and flight simulators, for that matter, back into the mainstream.
Oh, God. You know how much I would love to see more mainstream flight sims? Ugh. I mean, we're seeing this resurgence with space games, which is great. And yeah, I think you're right. The Oculus is definitely going to help with that. But can you imagine if we saw more, like, MicroProse-style flight sims?
I mean, I used to play the hell out of Falcon 3.0. Remember that? Like back?
Oh, shit, yeah. Of course I do.
So good. So good.
That was before Falcon became more of a sim than a game.
Yeah, I think that the Janes with F-15 and F-18, that was the high point of simulations, and it's all been downhill since then.
Mm. Yeah, that was pretty much the pinnacle, and then that was like the last great hurrah.
And I'll throw Longbow 2 in there and make it the trifecta.
Yeah.
That was the three.
I think Falcon 4 and IL-2 kind of ruined it.
You know what I used to play way back then? Remember Aces Over the Pacific? Do you remember the Sierra?
Oh, God, yeah. The Dynamics games, Aces Over Europe and Aces Over the Pacific.
So good.
Oh, and the LucasArts, the earlier LucasArts games, did you play those? Yeah. Like Battlefield, 1942, Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe. I mean, that stuff was the shit. But the beauty of it was it wasn't so high fidelity or whatever. It could actually be a game. It could be fun, you know? But now it's all rivet counting. And Jim today sent me the manual for the new, what was that, the F-15 DCS?
Yeah, it's F-15C for DCS. Oh, just came out last week.
God.
And it's actually like a traditional manual. It's got, you know, here's how to dogfight and stuff in it, not just like, you know, here's all the avionics, good luck. And
right.
And you know, the other thing is
tactics.
Well, the other thing that's really nice is at the back of the manual, I actually made it that far this time. In the back of the manual, it's actually got like workflows for I want to launch this kind of missile. And it gives you like a press by key press of hit these things. You know, click this button. It's in the lower left of that MFD. And then do this. And yeah. So it walks you through doing that stuff, which I'll have to go back and check. See, I own Black Shark. I own A10A and A10C. You know, basically like everything but the Mustang for that thing and that other MI8 hip chopper, which didn't appeal to me. But I own a bunch of that stuff. But I really have not been able to penetrate that game because it's there. I need a key chart, right, that's laying on my desk. And maybe a tutor to help me, but it's enough. Like when I watch the YouTube video and it's like, here's how to start the engines. And like 15 minutes later, dude is still starting the engines. And it's like, well, you know, I was actually, when I was in the army, I was a AH-64 Apache crew chief, and I have done like cold ramp startups and it's like, you have a book in your lap, you know, and it's like, flick this switch, open these circuit breakers, you know, set the MUX switch to channel 3, you know, dude. And it's like, yeah, that's no fun. It's not at all. Yeah, it's a job, man. I just want to hit like control E engines, bang, let's go.
Or yeah, right.
You know, have it running on the runway. So, yeah, I don't know. But whenever I flew Falcon 4, after Falcon 4 got patched to hell and back, which you can still download free Falcon, which is once they got a hold of the source for it, then they opened it up and fixed everything, right? So Free Falcon is a pretty darn complete version of Falcon 4. But I used to fly that with some guys that were actually F-18 pilots in the Canadian Air Force. And, you know, they would take me out and we never shot at enemy planes, but we would, like, take off in formation and like, actually set waypoints. This was what was so crazy about Falcon 4 is you could actually go into the navigation system as if it was a real aircraft and on the runway actually, like, manually key in the coordinates for your steer points and stuff. And I'm like, I had no idea you could do this shit in this game. And it took actually playing it with real pilots that were familiar with the hardware that were like, oh, yeah, this is totally what you do. You know, you set these things up. And then we're going to fly on this mission and, you know, like steer point 3, we're going to turn left and then we're, you know, and we'd go out and like drop bombs in a field, you know, like, okay, we're going to bomb that barn down there. Okay. And yeah, so, I mean, that was enough game right there. There didn't need to be any enemies in that thing at all. Nothing needed to shoot back at me for me to get completely to the point of saturation. Like there's more game here than I can possibly chew. So, and I don't know, man, like Falcon or F-15 rather was my sweet spot because I could go out, kill stuff, feel like I accomplished something, progress through the campaign. But once you get a workload, like what was going on in Falcon 4, just flying the plane to, you know, unless you're just like yanking the stick around, but to fly the plane properly is enough workload that I don't have to worry about deploying ordnance. To just be completely saturated with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So
maybe that's why simpler flight sims like the one you play, War Thunder. Would you call that a flight sim?
Oh my God. Have you not played it? What's wrong with you?
I played it once with you, and that's the only time I ever played it.
It's totally a flight sim. It's the Gaijin guys who made, what was it? Wings, something. I've got it on Steam.
They made a few things. They made Birds of Prey for the PS3. That's it.
Birds of Prey on the PS3.
Yeah.
And then what the heck is this thing called?
Wings of Prey?
Yeah, Wings of Prey. Yeah. And which is not a bad game. Most of the Wings of Prey content is actually in War Thunder. If you go into the single player missions, it's all in there. And unfortunately, a lot of it is DLC that you have to like buy with gold eagles in the game. But it's a pretty damn cool game. I fly squad nights every Sunday and Tuesday night. It's taw.net. Tell them that Azram sent you. If you join up, I get promoted. And you know, but it's like seriously, you know, you got to be there twice a week, and we fly practices together, and hopefully someday we're gonna shoot people other than ourselves. And
but what I'm saying is that's more of an accessible thing because it's World War II, right?
Right. Because it's World War II. And there's different levels of accessibility even in World War II, right? Because,
that's true.
Like, because in this game, you're not worried about trim. We fly on realistic, but we don't fly on sim. Because whenever you get into sim mode, it turns off all the things. Like, a lot of the people that play with us normally would just play arcade, which is seriously arcade, right? And then realistic's kind of my sweet spot, because if I spot enemies, it will put a little red diamond over top of them so I can keep track of them, because I'm not trying to look at one single black pixel that's moving around on my screen. And I don't have a track IR yet, so it's like I'm trying to do that with that eye camera, but it's a little shaky. But it's tough to keep eyes on an aircraft. Well, when you play it in sim mode, you're in the cockpit view. There's no, like, turn the cockpit off and just have a glass, you know, where you're not obstructed by all the ironwork around you. And so that cuts your visibility down. And then there are absolutely no cheats. You know, it's like you are scanning the horizon looking for little black pixels in the clouds at that point. And, there's no assists at all if you turn it all the way up to sim, which a lot of people prefer to play it that way because you score points and unlock other planes and stuff about 10 times faster when you do that. So
maybe that's where the resurgence will lie in games like that that lets you play and tweak just the way you like it.
Yeah, I think that's the deal. Is like whenever you look at DCS with their F-15 game, right? And you called this out when you were looking at the manual. You're like, okay, there's the one page that's like, here's the avionics for people that want to play an arcade game. And then the other 50 pages are, here's the avionics for people who want it real, right? So, because if you set it up arcade mode, you might as well be playing like F-19 Stealth Fighter from Microprose.
Hey, you know what? I would rather play that. I was just about to say, I would love like a modern version of like F-19. Or one of those, or like Strike Commander. You know what? Let Star Citizen do well, and let Chris Roberts make another Strike Commander. How great would that?
Strike Commander was hella cool. It was the limitations of what could be done by computers then. So
yeah.
But given what's possible with computers now, if he remade Strike Commander just with today's graphical capabilities, but keep the core gameplay. Holy crap, the perfect flight sim for people who want to fly a plane but don't want to learn how to fly a plane.
And also and also manage a company.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I hear he's a total workaholic, which I appreciate his work ethics because, I mean...
He totally seems like one. So how far along is this thing, this Exodus of Soul thing?
We've got almost all the missions basically laid out and working, and it's now we're sort of in the stages of optimization. We are toying. So I kind of wanted to get you guys' opinion on something while we're talking about early access programs, and the thought came to our minds that we kind of maybe want to do an early access for Exodus. I am not a big believer of wanting to charge people, especially for the type of game that we're doing, charging $50 or anything. I just don't think I find it morally reprehensible for me. I just can't do it. And I know, look, if we were more of a systemic driven game, I would feel a little bit more comfortable with it, but because we are, you know, sort of a scripted game, I would love the idea of releasing an early access out on Steam and maybe charging maybe $10 or something, and if you buy into it now, you know, you'll get all future additions to it, you know, of course, for free essentially. And what I like about it is it helps for people that are really invested in the experience. They can come in and they can really help sort of fine tune it. And almost be a part of the team in a way. It could, you know, find bugs certainly would help. With us being such a small team, the more eyes on it, the better. So I kind of wanted to gauge your opinions on that.
See, I know a lot of people who love early access. I mean, and in some cases it works great. Like for Kerbal Space Program, it's worked fantastically. And for some other games, like with the next car game, it seems to be working well and stuff like that. But some, I on the forums I hang out there, some people are like, oh God, another early access game. Can we just get the full damn game? I don't want early access. So it's kind of tough. Like, I'm not entirely sure what people want in that regard. See, I guess if you did early access and, like you said, like gave an incentive, like, oh, help us fix our game, but you get all future DLC, you know, for free, that would probably turn some heads, especially if you still gave the discount to people who own the original game.
Yeah, that would certainly be the case. It would basically be we'd be rolling out the game. Think of it like we'd roll out, just hypothetically speaking, we'd roll out, let's say, the prologue, right? Those set of missions. And we're also toying around with more systemic-driven modes that are not entirely scripted. They're like maybe like a survival mode, for example, or we have a few things that we've been cooking up. But the idea is that, let's say, you know, you roll out the first four missions of the game. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, the next four. And then a couple weeks later after that, the next set of missions. And we kind of, you know, maintain that sort of trajectory, so to speak, or maintain that sort of release until the whole thing is out. And then we take a step back and look at what we want to do and then, you know, continue along that path. But keep growing the game. So it, almost like episodic in a sense, but you know, early access type episodic, right? Where it's we just keep growing the game till eventually it's the whole thing. It literally is the whole game.
I guess what would concern me is if you're doing it that way, I'd be concerned about spoilers for people who haven't bought the game yet, since it's so story driven. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my concern because, you know, people just go on Steam and they read forums and they're like, oh, thanks for the spoiler.
You know what would be hilarious is if you just made a dogfight module and you just said, all right, we're out before Chris Roberts with the dogfight module.
Well, you want to hear something funny? Okay, so after we shipped Soul, our programmer took in his part-time – for about 3 months, he basically made Star Citizen in a very crude form. But it's open world. It's sector based. You can travel in between sectors at your whim. You can get out of your ship and go into first person combat seamlessly. So there's, you know, fully. You can actually get up in your cockpit and walk around in your cockpit while your ship is moving. We have factions. Fleets of ships that go in between and all AI driven and no scripting at all. This is all working now. We have all of this done now, but it's very, very rudimentary, right? I mean, very rudimentary to the point where it would be embarrassing to release it. But the systems are there. They're actually, and this is where we want to take it like long-term. Our vision, our grand vision is, not Star Citizen, not an MMO, but think of it more of like DayZ in space, in a sense, ooh, where you can fly. You know, you can fly around this sort of world, and you can get out and go and you know, do your trading and do. But you can actually own a property in the game. But you can't really do that in DayZ. But the idea is that you can own space stations and actually customize space stations and assemble them to your liking. So through this whole modular system that we actually have all working now. So it's just, you know, it's all pretty rudimentary. But that's where I think, you know, we're toying, we're thinking about how we can exploit all of these systems that we've built. And so one of the ideas, right, is that this game, the open world aspect, would get added on to, you know, the early access of the main story, right? It would be like a separate mode, and it would all like be client server driven, and then that way you have a more systemic approach to early access and adding on to like the open world aspects of the game and doing the single player stuff too, doing like sort of both in a way.
I'd buy the single player for that. I mean, early access for that.
Yeah, I think that would probably go over pretty well. I hope so, at least. And it, you know, it's pretty cool. And then another thing I wanted to sort of get your guys' opinions on is that. So I've said time and time again our game is Unreal, but we don't use Kismet for anything, which is Unreal 3's sort of scripting system, right? We don't use Matinee for the cutscenes. We don't use any of that stuff. It's actually an event-driven editor that I custom designed myself. But it makes creating missions really, really easy, like to the point where, anybody can do it. It doesn't take a tremendous amount of technical skill to actually create the missions. The learning curve is actually really low. And the idea is sort of to release the tools into the wild, so to speak, and start, I mean, let people really sort of do mods and custom, you know, whatever they want. It's a really, really friendly, user-friendly system. So, you know, part of that is like the Steam, you know, the workshop program that they have. And yeah. So wanted to sort of gauge your guys' opinions on that.
Oh God, no. People love that shit. Oh God, yeah. No, I mean, look like we were talking about, you know, Free Space 2 last week. I mean, that came with an editor. And people still use it to make mods and missions 15 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. I designed the editor that we use to create our missions kind of after the Free Space 2 editor, Fred.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
So, I do think it's quite pot. I really would like to do that in the near future for this game I'm talking about is, and we've talked about it at great lengths, is to give back to the community and let them take it and run with it and create whatever they want, you know?
No, I mean that engenders goodwill. It definitely gives your game legs longer than it might have.
Yeah.
Otherwise, because I mean, people would be gonna like, okay, what do I do when these missions are over?
Yeah.
You know, now people will be able to be like, and if you make it like easy to go online, maybe even in the game, and download missions through the game.
Yeah.
Like through like some kind of front end where like people upload and download missions directly from the game.
Yeah.
That'd be even better. And then people can rate them and shit. Oh, you're golden. You're golden if you can do all that.
Yeah, I want to, you know, it's funny because I've had this idea for a long time, but I want to almost create like a standalone product called like Space Game Construction Set or something, where it's like we give all these tools and we give all this really easy way to build content or put content in the game and let people rate and sort of, you know, rate and curate themselves the content and let really the good stuff bubble up to the top. And you know, I don't know. It just seems like
that's kind of what happened with Unreal Tournament, like like the normal one in 2K4, where like you get these mutators and these mods. You can just go. I don't know if you can remember if you could do it in the game, but you can definitely go on websites and they'd be rated, and you can download them easily and stuff. And if you could do that, like all within a simple interface in the game, even
would do so well.
Oh God, it'd be like an internal app store type thing, you know. Where like you can go, oh, I want to play this kind of thing. Boom, you know, and people would love that shit.
I think there'd be a pretty strong community around it. I really do.
Oh yeah, I mean, people are already, look at all these people already making space games. If you gave them tools like that, they would have to buy and they could just share it with their friends. It might get them inspired to eventually make their own thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
and the, So I, you know, there's a lot of things we're sort of toying around with, and we've really made our tools super easy to use. I mean, you know, the greatest thing is this kind of maybe sound kind of like odd, but we don't actually, our game is entirely Unreal script driven. We didn't touch the source code at all. And so, you know, it just, what it is it just makes scripting everything easier. It makes, you know, the code easier to work with, and we can release, you know, release it to the wild and let people really sort of go hog wild. Like I said, mission design and you know, the effects system and how people, you know, create assets is, you know, super, super user friendly. It's all Unreal. So it's all proven, tested. So I don't know. I think it's something that we'll probably do in the future in some form or another, give people ability to build and mod and release their stuff to the public, and you know, yeah, we'll you know. So that's the long term sort of plan for the game, as well as the open world stuff I talked about.
Right. Well, that seems like a good place to wrap this up, because we've been talking for almost 2 hours, and I think it sounds like people have only been able to hear me. So it would be great, Jim. You got all this recorded, right? You can. You got all this, right?
Yeah, we're all good.
Okay. Because I didn't start my recorder because professionals. but Chris, I want to thank you for taking the time not only to come on and talk about Excess of Soul, but to talk about all this other candid game development, salesmanship stuff that, you know, we love hearing, you know.
I mean, well, I appreciate you guys giving me the opportunity to talk my head off. So thank you for that.
Oh, no, it's been a pleasure. It's been quite a bit of fun, actually. Folks, we're sorry about the technical difficulties. Have no idea what happened. Jim, do you think it's a Skype thing more than anything else?
I think it's you.
I think it's me. It's probably me.
It's all you.
I won't stream anymore. I'm done. I'm not going to stream ever again.
All right, well, that's the show, folks.
It's all my fault, and I'm just going to nip off and shoot myself. Just like the cow in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I'll just nip off in the back and shoot myself, and then you can eat my thighs. No, that was weird.
I don't know. I've seen your thighs.
Yes. Okay, if I throw in a satchel, then you'll be on board. Folks, thank you for listening again. Sorry about the technical difficulties. Hopefully, we'll have this sorted out for the audio version. And Chris, thank you so much for joining us. It was a lot of fun.
I had a great time, guys. Anytime. Anytime. I will be more than happy to come on.
Oh, we'll probably revisit this once the game goes live or early access or whatever happens. But we'll definitely want to revisit this. So, yeah, folks, thanks for listening. Cool. Have a great night. Goodbye.
Bye.